This is Digital Story Podcast number 674, February 12th, 2019. Today's theme is Photography and Copyright, an interview with Maggie Hallahan. I'm Derek Story. The online world has changed the business landscape for artists who care about protecting their intellectual property. But there are reasonable, affordable steps that you can take to protect your images from being used by others without your permission. And on this week's show, I talk with professional photographer Maggie Hallahan about those very steps. I hope you enjoy this interview. So even though Maggie's client list probably includes companies that we don't have on ours, such as Microsoft, by working with these large entities, she's had to learn about copyright, intellectual property, and all that kind of stuff. And because she's had to learn so much on such a grand scale, that really helps understand the big issue. And understanding that big issue is exactly what I wanted to talk about, because it's like a lot of things. For instance, if I'm going to write an article about X, I really need to research 2X or 3X so that I present X properly. And that was way too algorithmic probably for this show, but you get my point. And that's the sense I had when I sat down with Maggie. Even though we're going to be talking about copyright for you and for me, and of course for her, and even though she's worrying about things that you and I don't need to think about, what she has learned applies to us, and the steps that she has are steps that we should be taking for our own work. So I'm going to get over to the interview table right now, and we'll see what Maggie has to say. I think you will enjoy this, and I definitely know that you're going to learn a couple things. All right, so here we go. Here's Maggie. I'm sitting here in the studio with Maggie Hallahan, a professional photographer, someone that I have known since Iceland, right? Isn't that where we...
About 15 years ago.
Wow, my gosh. When Lightroom first came out, right?
We were Lightroom 1 beta. We were trying to help the user interface. Group of pro photographers went over there with Mikkel Åland, and we used that app, and we were, whoa.
But we're talking about something a little bit more serious today, aren't we?
Yeah, I wanted to come up and speak with you about the importance of carrying on this incredible tradition of copywriting your photography work.
Yeah, I think it's important too. And that's why when you contacted me about this, I said, we've got to do this show, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's ever going. I mean, people, when we were younger, taught us how to do this.
Right.
And we did it, and we had good benefits and outcomes. So why don't we get into it, and I can tell you my procedure.
Let's do that. Let's start with a little bit about the kind of work that you do, because you are shooting for some pretty large businesses these days, and have been for the last 10 years or so.
Yeah. So I had been an editorial photographer for about 20 years, and I worked worldwide. And at about the time that digital started overtaking the market, I was when I transferred into doing photo brand stories. So I work for big corporations like Microsoft and Electronic Arts, and I develop libraries of images so that the people that work there in marketing can pull them down and use them. So copyright's really important, metadata, and that the images aren't used out of the want of that brand.
Absolutely. And through this work, you really upped your copyright game, right? I mean, because it was actually important that you can protect your clients, right? Or you are the guardian of those images, as you've told me before. So you learned a lot about copyright through this type of work.
Yeah, I mean, back in the day when we were film, you had to do copy slides and then send the copy slides into the copy office. And it was a long process and it was hard to do. Now it's digital. So about the time we did Lightroom, I figured out that you could take the entire shoot. So say you photograph for 2 weeks in Africa and you come back, you can not have to edit anything and you can export all those images as small JPEGs and then submit them to the copyright office. And at the time you submit them, that's it. They're in your name and you are the copyright owner of your own images.
One of the things that really jumped out at me when we started talking about this is there's really not a big reason, you know, to avoid doing this. I mean, if it were something that was very complicated, took a whole lot of time, that would be one thing. But actually now these days, it's a relatively simple process, right?
It's simple and the benefit is just amazing.
Yeah.
So if you have created something and it's your art, and then someday you see that art being used, or even someone has stolen your art and they're reselling it to someone else for a big marketing campaign, you don't have the legal standing right of already owning the copyright, the likelihood that you'll ever get them to stop using it is pretty small.
You're tackling one of the things I was going to ask you, which is, I think it's an urban myth really, but that if you can prove ownership of the picture, in other words, that let's say that you can go to court and have a raw file, that then you would have a case. But actually, if you haven't copyrighted the image, you're not even going to find a lawyer that will help you, right?
No. In fact, I have a case that's recent, and when I talk to a lawyer that advises me a lot on copyright, since it was copywritten right after it was photographed and it was so clearly misused, she's taking the job on at this point in what, you know, for her percentage. Mm-hmm. So I'm not even having to put money out for a lawyer to get this person to stop use.
By the same token, if you hadn't done this, you're not going to find anyone to help you, are you?
No, she wouldn't have taken it on. Yeah. I mean, she checked my copyright. Like, I had to produce it and put mm-hmm. the whole case together before mm-hmm. she accepted mm-hmm. it.
There's two overriding reasons why I think that this is a good idea, and I'm talking about copywriting. You know, one is you have some recourse, right? You have a chance, mm-hmm. right, against people who are misusing your work. Usually the one thing that you could probably count on is that you could get them to stop misusing it.
Yeah, because in the letter to them, with cease and desist letter, you could just say, this is a copyright image to me. You are not authorized. Stop using it mm-hmm. at once.
Right. So having a copyright gives you the leverage to get them to stop using it.
That goes right up the chain of command to their legal office, and they say, pull it off now.
Right, exactly. And so really the thing that you're creating for this effort is peace of mind, right? That you have some recourse.
You know, the thing is when you're out creating, and especially your personal, I copyright my personal work as well, you've created that work. It's part of who you are. It's hard to imagine what that feels like if someone has taken that without your permission and then amplified it and are making money on it. It's a pretty horrible experience. And until you actually experience it, you don't really know how terrible it is. For me, I have all my gear insured with my, you know, business insurance, mm-hmm. and it's my assets. It's the things that I have created is the top most value to mm-hmm. me. So I have now my film is digitized, and I've gone back and copywritten all of the film work I did as well.
Yeah. All right. So you thoroughly convinced me about the need to copyright. How hard is it to do this?
And that's the thing.
Let's
it's so easy.
Okay. Let's talk about that.
Okay. So you remember in Lightroom mm-hmm. where you could just take all photos and do an export?
Right.
So when you export these, the technical law that I've been advised by lawyers is when you export them, the size they need to be is big enough that the image is recognizable. So that size is only about 12K. Mm-hmm. So you can export anything around 350 by 250 or something in that range. And then when you do a test bunch, you could do like a test 10, you know, because say you have, you know, 10,000 images in that Lightroom library, just do about 10 of them and take a look and say, oh, hey, I could totally recognize that this is that guy and that's that, you know, car and this is this girl. And, you know, like if it's recognizable, then that's good enough. And so then you take a folder, put it on your desktop or your external drive, and then you take everything out of Lightroom and you say export all. You don't need to go through and only export certain edits, and it doesn't matter if later you change the naming convention. You just take the whole body of work and you export it, and if you say have 10,000 images and you export them all at about 12K, you're definitely under a DVD size.
Absolutely. You could be gone for weeks and you're still under a DVD size.
Right? At that 12K, That's a lot to get that many gigs.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so you have this folder of these images that aren't very big, but it's everything from this shoot. Okay, what happens next?
Well, I just want to add a little note.
Okay.
And that is, if you have a client or someone and you've put any of that on social media while you were out and about before you've copywritten it, then you can't include that particular photo in the big export. So I just want to note that if it's been published or pushed and someone, you sent it to someone and they published it, then it takes the whole entire group of images and it changes them from unpublished work to published work, and it's a much more complicated problem and much more expensive. So for the $55, all, you know, 10,000 images, best to use all unpublished work in that grouping.
You know, that makes me think about just workflow on something like this. So if I were going to do something that was going to go up in social, it seems like I would just take that shot with the iPhone, right? With my smartphone, put it up, you know, have fun with that. But all the work that goes on my card, right, with what I call a real camera, all that work does not go on social, does not get published until the copyright is out.
Well, let's say we're talking to someone who really is doing their art with their iPhone, mm-hmm. and they like to publish every day. Mm-hmm. Well, if they have the budget, they can do a little copyright send off of their phone and upload everything they shot that day, and it's just $55 a day.
Right.
So they could do that,
right,
and then still do social every day, and it would be copywritten before it hit the social. So it is technically possible.
Yeah.
And it's just my style of work right now is that I do big groupings mm-hmm. of a project, you know, more reportage, mm-hmm. you know, and then I can do it. But let's say I was really like shooting for a corporation and I was doing it all with, you know, super quick technology and it was getting published. I would pay the $55 a day and just every day do a copyright upload.
Okay, good. All right. So that's good to know. So you can do it online. Or you can download a short form. And we're talking about dealing with the U.S. Copyright Office here, right? We're not talking about some third-party agency or something like that.
And by the way, I'm pretty sure it is still the only copyright office in the world. So they get tons of people from Europe and Paris and Hamburg mm-hmm, mm-hmm. sending to the U.S. Copyright Office. So we have international people using that website all the time.
Okay. Great. Now, you like the kind of the mail-in way, right?
There are two ways.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's the online upload, mm-hmm. and then there's go and export the PDF onto your computer. That's the short copyright form, short form. And it's just one page, and then you can just fill it out with your hand, like you could handwrite it. and then you can hand write your $55 check, and then you can take that 10,000 images, put it on a DVD, and then take the whole thing and send it by UPS. And the moment you have sent it, you have the proof of sending it on mm-hmm. the UPS, at that moment that it's been sent, it is legally copywritten. Even before it actually gets to the copyright office, at that moment that it's in the shipping, it's copywritten. And, you know, by the way, this is for video and music, like all art, right? It's the
right.
same form.
Exactly.
And so when you send it out, then you have peace of mind. No one can ever steal it, and you've done unpublished work. So now you can just use the work anywhere you want, and you're covered. I like that because I make a duplicate of the check and the page that I've written it out, which, by the way, when I write the form out or do it online, I put the most limited amount of work. So if I go to Tanzania for 2 weeks, I just say Tanzania 2006. Like, I wouldn't put details because you don't need to. It can just be very open, like multiple countries, just somewhat identifying. The thing that's identifying is the actual image, not
right.
the naming convention. It's the pixels of the image is
okay.
the thing that you're copywriting. So when I do that, I make a duplicate DVD. So in my file, I have my original handwritten one, I have my DVD, and I have a copy of my check. Soon as the check is canceled and it's up on my account online, I export the back of the check and the front of the check in like a little PDF export, and I print it out, and then I put it with my other form that I hand filled out.
Right.
And then I actually have a copy of the DVD. So I have a case going on right now where I did it like that, and I don't have to go back to the copyright office and say, hey, double, triple prove that that was in there.
Right.
I have it on that DVD, and I took that to my lawyer and I said, look, here's the copy that I actually sent in. Look, it's right here. This is identifiable. And that is what the
and
lawyer...
And she goes, that's all I need. And that, boy, that's beautiful. Because that's really nice not having... I mean, you could if you really needed to, But it's nice not having to go back to the copyright office to get some sort of something that proved that you did it. You've got it all right there.
I have never even talked to anyone who's mm-hmm. done that. Mm-hmm. Like, you'd have to talk to someone else. I've heard there's a fee, and I hear that there's time you have to wait.
I'm sure it's horrible.
I have no idea. I just know there's more forms to fill right. out, and then there's money. But right. I've never heard of anyone who's done it this more manual, snail mail way. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of any law case that then goes back and asks the copyright office to prove that it was in that. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have your copy DVD and you have a copy of what you wrote and they correlate to the project, mm-hmm. and then you, after you've sent this in, about a month or two later, the actual U.S. copyright for your whole $55 of unpublished, for the unpublished work, they send you a copyright form with like an embossed stamp saying this is copywritten.
Yeah. I mean, really.
And it has the name from the collection of Tanzania mm-hmm. in 2006 mm-hmm. or whatever.
What goes through your mind when someone does find an image of yours and they want to use it? What are sort of things that you think about when you think about whether or not to let them use it? You know, like, what cases do you and what cases do you go, eh?
I guess the real dividing line is if someone's going to be making money off of the photo. Mm-hmm. A company, you know, that's using consumer, you know, photos for consumer use, and they're going to use it worldwide. Right now, if someone came to me and they were like Exxon and they needed a photo that I was doing in Africa, I would charge them about $2,500 a year for use of that image. And it would be a limited time that they could utilize it. And they mm-hmm. would have to come back if they mm-hmm. wanted to use it longer. That's because they're going to be using that in Time Magazine, talking about their great efforts in Africa to help some, you know, something with education or something right. like that. In that case, they're using it for brand, for raising their brand value. And so they owe me money for mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. Now, if someone is working like they're, you know, raising money for malaria prevention bed nets, and it's an NGO, and, you know, of course, I'm going to let them use the image. They give me copyright credit, and hopefully they're going to be, you know, able to maximize how much money they're raising.
Exactly. And your name is associated with something that you feel good about, too.
Absolutely.
Right?
And let me tell you, Exxon generally won't put my name on that photo when it runs. Mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. know, so they're not going to give me
right.
brand recognition in general. I can negotiate that, mm-hmm. and it is something that you can put on the table. But in general, like Microsoft, EA, like most of my big corporate clients would never use my name on anything. Exactly. They're paying you, so.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah.
There you go. That's enough.
That's advertising.
That's advertising, right, right.
I wanted to just share about the contracts with my corporate work, that one of the things that I'm doing is I'm copywriting everything that's, you know, obviously unpublished as soon as I can, so that I can start giving it to my client quickly so they can utilize it. When they are utilizing it, I've already set up an agreement before I start my shoot, and we sign, you know, deep paperwork around leasing and copywriting. And so I copyright the images with the copyright office, and then I offer them unlimited time lease of the images. So if there was something I did in my production that turned out someone was in the photo in the far back, and then they want to sue Microsoft, or they want to sue Electronic Arts, Microsoft or Electronic Arts or some big company could just say to that person who's trying to sue them, because their picture was used in advertising, or a picture of them, or their artwork, or their house, or something. If they're trying to sue Microsoft, Microsoft would then refer them to me and to my company. And I then deal with it directly. Also, if someone has used the image and they didn't have permission, and I say I photographed it for Microsoft, I am responsible. Microsoft says, oh my gosh, someone's using that photo and it came from blah, blah, blah. It's my job to write a cease and desist letter and stop them from using it. And so Microsoft doesn't want to be the deep pockets at all. Mm-hmm. So it's a lease, and part of my business agreement with them is that I take care of it. I am the one standing in charge of, you know, what the result will be.
So Maggie, speaking of your photos, so where can people go to find out more about you, see the work that you're doing?
Great. So my website is MHP. pv.net, and that's Maggie Hallahan Photography Video. And actually, I have video clips on there, too.
All right. Yay. All right. Good. Do you take all sorts of jobs, or are you...
Yeah, I actually love everything. Yeah, like, yeah. I love everything. I mean, obviously, I don't shoot food for McDonald's, so it's very specific, but... I love people. I do executive portraits. I photographed a lot of famous people. I have done film, feature films. And currently I like doing larger projects that bring awareness to, like currently I'm doing water protection and water prevention. And I have done a lot of work with malaria prevention, AIDS, family planning. So nice. I like doing large bodies of work that is consistently great for people to use.
All right, you guys heard it. All right, you know who to go to, right, for this. Maggie, thank you so much for coming up to the studio today. It's great to see you again.
Thank you. I love that you are doing this, Derek. It's such a great service for everyone, and I hope that people continue to pass on this evergreen information around copyright.
Absolutely. All right, take care.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
That was terrific. Thank you so much, Maggie, for sitting down and joining me and talking about this very important subject. By the way, as Maggie mentioned, you can learn more about her by visiting her site, mhpv.net. And I have a link in the show notes. Go over and look at everything that she's up to. Look at her client list. Look at her work. And, you know, think about if you've got a big project coming up where you really need a professional, Maggie would definitely be a good choice. All right, I have a follow-up. So after the show aired, I got some mail from listeners, and they're saying, hey, we enjoyed the interview, and it was interesting about the workflow and everything, but I think some of the information needs to be updated, the information that was presented in the podcast. And I want to read two letters in particular, because I thought they were very helpful, and not only helpful for me, but I think they'll be helpful for you as well. So I'm going to share each one now. Now, neither one of these, this is not legal advice. These are photographers who have also delved into this copyright issue, who are doing it, who know about it, and, you know, have done their homework. And, you know, this is, you know, what they've learned through their experience, and they want to share that with, well, originally they wanted to share it with me, and then I asked for their permission to share it with you because I think this is really important information. We've got to get this right. You know, when we talk about something on the show, if it needs to be corrected or updated, then we have to do that. And that's what this is. So the first one is from Scott Davenport. And Scott wrote, caught up on TDS 674 today. Interesting info from Maggie about the business side of her client dealings. With copyright, though, I'm pretty sure the registration of unlimited number of photos is gone as of mid-2018. Whether it is published or unpublished works, a single application is capped at 750 images. It's much more expensive to register all the photos from a given shoot, especially if you're a prolific photographer, such as weddings or events. For my work, I copyright only my published works. There is a provision that, so long as your application is submitted within 90 days of the first publication, you can get full protection under copyright law. It takes an amount of discipline, but it's very doable. To the point that you raised in the podcast about workflow, this might be of interest to your audience. And, you know, both Scott and then I also have Myra sent me a nice note, too. I'm going to read in a second. But the first thing that they pointed out that, you know, is the headline here is that a single application is capped at 750 images now. Okay. 750 is not unlimited. It's not as many as you could fit on a DVD. It's capped at 750. Now, Myra Martinez also wrote me, and she was equally helpful, and I want to read you what she said as well. I just finished listening to your latest podcast, number 674, on copyright. I need to point out some of the points made by your host are no longer current. First of all, unlimited submissions are a thing of the past. Group submissions of unpublished photographs are limited to no more than 750 photos, which is the same thing that Scott was pointing out. Number two, in addition to submitting the digital photos, completing the online submission, preferred method by the Copyright Office, requires a list with title and file name for each photo in the group. Okay, so that also is different than what Maggie was talking about in our interview. Now, I have some resource for you. Again, you know, neither of these folks are dispensing legal advice, but I have a resource for you where you can follow up and sort of, you know, confirm all of this on your own. And the first one is a link provided to me by Myra. She was super helpful. And I have the link in the show notes, and it's from copyright.gov, and it's called the Gruff Transcript. And I checked out this link, and I looked at this, and it's really helpful. It just really gives you a walkthrough on how to do this and, you know, what the rules and regs are. That link is in the show notes. Make sure you check it out. Now, the changes in the number of images per submission were implemented on 2/20/2018. And, you know, then she went on to say, this is Myra still, that more draconian measures were about to be made later in the year, but the public comment period was extended until June 21st, 2018, and then everything stopped. You can read about that in a post on the site, The Copyright Zone, the May 24th, 2018 post, and I have a link to that, and that's both Ed and Jack, and they are great, and they have really good information there, and this is their thing, and they are really on top of it. So a big thanks to both Scott and Myra for their contributions to this conversation, for helping us, you know, get the story straight, which is the most important thing. And as I said, that, you know, a lot of the things that Maggie talked about last week were helpful in terms of workflow and, you know, the importance of copyright, all of that. That was super helpful. But getting into the details, I think that if you're going to pursue this, that you want to take a look at these links that I have in the show notes, and you want to make sure that, you know, you have a clear understanding of what's going on, so that when you think your stuff is protected, it really is. Portfolio Box tip of the week. So I have a good one for you this week, and it's showing you step by step how to create a professional looking contact page for your Portfolio Box site. And I just think that's super important because, you know, we put our great images up there. Maybe we put a little bit about ourselves. Well, the next step is, or the thing that we hope is, that someone sees that and goes, wow, I would like to work with that person. That artist looks like he or she really knows what they're doing. And so you want to make that easy, and you want to make that professional looking. So I have a link in the show notes to a video produced by Portfolio Box that just shows you, boom, 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 here's how to do it. It only takes a few minutes. They have some great templates. You pick the right template, you customize it, you publish it, and suddenly people have a great and easy way to get in contact with you. And, you know, they're going, wow, this is a good looking contact page. Not only does this person know how to take great pictures, they have their act together on the business side of things as well. Alrighty, so that's our tip of the week for Portfolio Box. I also want to mention that our photo contest up close is winding down here. For those of you that listen to the podcast on the day that publishes, today is probably the 12th, right? You have till the end of the day. Just send your close-up image to thenimblephotographer@gmail.com. Remember, the person that is honored with the best up-close image gets a free one-year subscription to Portfolio Box Pro, and that is a nice treat. I'm telling you, I am so excited about this, being able to give this away to our listeners. So if you haven't sent your shot in yet, there's still time. Attach it to an email. Send it to thenimblephotographer@gmail.com. Throw your lens cap in the ring and see if you can get this one-year subscription. It's a very, very nice thing. And if you want to see my Portfolio Box site, all you have to do is go to The Digital Story and click the About link up in the top nav bar, or just go to derekstoryphotography.com, and you can see what I've done in terms of my work history and a couple of galleries and so forth, and you can get a feel for a portfolio box site. It's really quite nice. Now, if you want to create your own, you can do that for free. Just click on the tile that's on every page of the digital story, or use the link in the show notes, and then that'll take you over there to our landing page. We have our own landing page on Portfolio Box. Get started there, you know, build your free site, get to know the tools, get a feel for it. And then if you decide to upgrade to the pro site, which is only $83 a year, including your custom domain name, you will get 20% off if you started on our landing page. That's right. You'll get 20% off the $83 annual price. That, my friends, is a good deal. Big thanks to Portfolio Box for sponsoring this week's show. Get that up close shot in. Someone is going to win a free year. ProGrade has some software out, Digital Recovery Pro, that can save your lost raw photos. So you might remember about ProGrade. I interviewed their head guy back a while ago. Terrific memory cards, terrific memory card reader. Well, now they're also in the photo recovery game. Here is a report from Petapixel. Let me just read it to you and tell you what they're up to. Recovery Pro goes beyond JPEG files and recognizes other types of photo files as well, including most types of files from cameras by companies like Canon, Nikon, Sony, Fuji, Panasonic, DJI, GoPro, and more. And then they list a whole bunch of alphabet soup RAW file extensions. In total, the software is currently capable of recovering over 90 different types of photo, video, and audio files from SDXC, micro SDHC, compact flash, and CF fast cards. So their thing is that, you know, some recovery software allows you to get certain files, other recovery software allows you to get other files. Their recovery software allows you to get more files, more files, and go way beyond JPEGs into all these different types of RAW files that aren't always easy to recover. Now, if you're interested in this, the ProGrade Digital Recovery Pro is compatible with both Windows 10 and Mac OS 10, and it's available for $50 for a 12-month subscription. If you'd like to give it a try, there's also a try before you buy evaluation copy, and you just have to go over to the ProGrade Digital site. You never know when you have something go big wrong, and the last thing you want to do is lose those important shots. Hopefully this software will help you get them back. A quick update on the Sonoma Coast Workshop. So the reserve list has sold out. So right now that link won't work over on the signup page on the nimblephotographer.com. And what'll happen is that we'll go through the registration process here probably within the next week. Those of you that are on the reserve list for Sonoma Coast, you should be seeing a note from me real soon that walks you through the registration process. After that, if there are any openings in the workshop still, I'll go to the waiting list. If you want to be part of the waiting list, just drop me a line via the contact form on the nimblephotographer.com and just let me know that you want to be on the waiting list, and I'll, you know, hang on to those in the order that they're received. So right now we don't have anyone on the waiting list. So if you were to get on the waiting list, you'd be first and second and third and so on down the line. And this workshop is shaping up really, really nicely. I have excellent headquarters, just like I do at Joshua Tree. So we got a place to stay. We got a place to hang out and work and do our lab. We've got a place to enjoy food. And we've got a place to shoot, because both of these locations, both at Joshua Tree and at Bodega Bay, you just have to walk outside our headquarters and there's great photography there. And I just love that. Anyway, if you want to learn more about it, you can click on the workshops page. There's a link in the nav bar on thedigitalstory.com and learn all about it. And those of you that are on the reserve list, you'll be hearing from me really soon. Big thanks to our Inner Circle members, and we have our current photo challenge just about wrapping up, but there's still time to get an image in, which is RAW capture. Send me your best RAW capture without any editing in Lightroom or Photos or Capture One Pro. just the raw file, just the raw file. I mean, convert it to a JPEG first, please. And then send it to me. You would be amazed at how cool the shots are that we're getting right out of the camera. And, you know, this is something that just makes me smile, makes me very happy. Big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this podcast, for participating in this fun site that we have going on over at Patreon. We have our own Inner Circle site where, you know, we have these photo challenges, we share content, and we comment on each other's work, and it's a lot of fun. If you want to become a part of that, click on the Patreon tile that's on every page of the Digital Story, and you can go over to the site and take a look at it. And if you want to support this podcast, which I highly recommend, you can take care of that right there as well. And finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. I think the coolest printing paper company in the business. And I say that because I have been working with these folks for years, and they are fantastic. They are so enthusiastic about inkjet printing. It's almost scary, I have to tell you. They have a wonderful Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. We have a landing page on their site. You can just click on the tile that's on every page of the Digital Story. That takes you to our landing page. And from there, you can learn about the special offer. You can learn about reviews, tutorials. You can get supplies. And of course, you can buy printing paper as well. Give them a look. Start making some art that you can hand to other people. And so they can hold it in their hands and go, my word, you are a good photographer. Red River Paper, the longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. It's so great to have them on board. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the chat with Maggie. I hope you learned a few things. I know I learned a few things. Working on some good stories for next week. Make sure you come back and join me. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.